Okay, this is Joan Weaver and from the Kinsley Library, and here with Rosetta Graff in the Kinsley City Room. And we're interviewing Mary Ellen Shinstock today about her involvement in the Tractorcade. It's October 10th, 2012. Okay, Mary Ellen, we wanted you to start out by describing what your farm was like in 1978 and 9, you know, when you got involved with the AMA. What did your farm consist of?
We had about 1,000 acres of wheat. We ran about anywhere between 400 to 600 head of stocker feeder cattle. We had alfalfa, probably, I think, 80 acres of alfalfa is what we had. And then we had some rented ground also. We owned two sections.
Yes, at this time you were a family with 5 children?
Yes.
And your husband? And was the farm your sole source of income?
Yes, until I went to work at the school as secretary, but up until that time it was.
Okay, when did you go to work for the school about?
I think it was probably about 80, 81, something like that.
So how did you hear about or get involved with the AAM?
I really can't remember how we heard about it. I can't remember if we heard something on TV or if it was word of mouth. But there, somebody from Springfield came out here and had a meeting.
Springfield, Missouri?
No, Springfield, Colorado.
Springfield, Colorado.
Came out here and had a meeting, and we went to it. And talked about the problems with American agriculture and filled us in a little bit on the movement.
Do you remember how many people were at that first meeting about, or was it?
It was pretty well attended. I can't remember exactly how many, but there was a lot of interest. A lot of interest.
And so from then, what?
Lila Fox and I started an ag office here in Kinsley, down at the Fox Machine, or Fox,
Implement?
What was it? Fox Implement. And the first Tractorcade to Topeka, I said, Lila, we ought to get a bus to go up there. We ought to fill up a bus to go up there. And she said, oh, Mary Ellen, we don't have time. We couldn't do it. And I said, I think I can do it.
Wait, you set up your office, was this right before the Tractorcade to Topeka?
Mm-hmm.
And what were you doing in the office? What was the purpose of the office?
Just to get information and to have it there so if people came in and wanted to know about it, or farmers came in and needed updates on what was happening, we could be there.
So you and she pretty much managed this, or were there other volunteers?
Not
or just
her
the,
and I,
just the two of you.
Because we had just started it, you know, mm-hmm. We just set it up.
So were you there together, or did you take shifts?
We took shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I don't think we have time to set this up. And I said, well, I think we do. I said, so I went home that afternoon, and from about 1 o'clock in the afternoon till about 10 o'clock that night, I called every farmer in Edwards County, and sometimes in Kiowa and... But anyhow, I filled the bus. We got a bus going.
Was this a commercial bus?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think there was 40. I had 40 seats to fill.
So would this be in 78 or 77?
77. Yeah. And so we filled the bus, and we went up. We rode on the bus. That was the first Tractorcade that went to Topeka. And then the next Tractorcade, then Leo drove the tractor up. But on the first Tractorcade, we filled a bus and we took it up. And I don't know what happened. I don't know why Lila dropped out, but she did, and she didn't really want the office in there. They had opened an office at Lewis that was really active, had a lot of people in it. And so I went there and worked. The Kinsley office didn't last too long.
I wonder if it was, were there people who did not appreciate what you were doing? Could that have been it, or it was hurting business, or?
I don't know. She never, and I really can't even remember why we quit. There was never any hard feelings between Leela and I. I mean, that wasn't it. I think Leela just had other things she wanted to do with her time.
Mm-hmm. And I think she just kind of, two of you doing it.
Yeah, I think she just kind of lost interest in the organization, the movement.
So, were most of your friends and farmers that you knew and associated with, they were supportive of what you were
doing? Yes, very, very. Okay. Most of the people in town were fairly supportive. There's only one business that I can think of. Of course, we didn't ask for money or anything like that. We asked for window space, you know, to put stuff in the windows that was going to advertise the tractor cage or something like that. There was only one business in town that I can think of that said no. And she says, my husband's a farmer, but I am not a farm wife. I am a businesswoman in Kinsley, and no, I don't want anything to do with it. So, you know, that was okay. That was how she felt. So, but she was the only one who didn't want any part of it.
And this was in 77, right before that first tractor came. Mm-hmm. You went and came back. And then when we were filling out your form, you said there were some other tractor came to, where was it, Larned? And
yeah.
Was that after that then?
Yeah, we were after the first tractor came. Then we had a tractor came in Larned, and we had a meeting and trying to spark interest over in that direction. And after we got done, well, we decided that we'd just come through and go through Lewis and Kinsley too, and a lot of the, I don't know how many people from Larned then went out and got their tractors and joined us and came through with us. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
So you went right down Main Street, and mm-hmm. Did you have permission to do this, or did you just...
Leo was a firm believer, and it was easier to beg for forgiveness than to ask for permission.
So how did the city feel after this impromptu parade?
Oh, we didn't know. We didn't care.
They didn't give you a ticket anyway.
No, they didn't give us a ticket.
And the tractors traveled at about what speed when you were on highways?
When we was going in road gear, I suppose maybe 30 mm-hmm. miles an hour. They don't go very fast. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really don't know.
So when you went through Kinsley, you don't remember about how many tractors were involved? And
I think there was probably 50, 60 tractors.
Oh, really? That big?
Yeah. Because we picked some up at Larned, mm-hmm. you know, and then we came through Lewis, and I think there was about 50, 60 tractors that came back.
Yeah. We hadn't heard about that involvement before. And then Leo drove his tractor to Topeka in 78. That would be mm-hmm. right before the 79 one to Washington.
Right, right.
So can you remember anything about that, his experiences?
Or? He drove the tractor up there, and my dad had a Winnebago, and he followed him up, and so it gave Leo a place to stay and other people a place to stay that didn't want to buy a motel room.
And you weren't able to go?
I was not able to go. I went up later on and drove the car up, you know, so I was there the day they actually had the parade through Topeka, and we had the meetings and stuff, and the speakers. I was up there for that, but I came up later in the car. Got lost.
And at this point, you are talking to whom? You wanted parity, right?
Yes.
How would you define parity?
Parity is the cost of production plus a living wage. But mainly it's the cost of production. We wanted to at least get that. And it would have been nice to have a living wage out of it too.
And you met with the senator and congressman?
Bob Dole. Mm-hmm. And with Bob Dole and Keith Sebelius. And then Castlebaum was up there. We talked
That's
to
Nancy.
Her, Nancy Castlebaum. And then we went, just hit all the offices. When we was up there, we went to all the senators' offices.
This would be the state representatives rather than federal at that point.
Oh, yeah, okay, the state representatives. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just, I think Martin was, what's his, Terry Martin? Was he the state senator or state
we
representative?
We might be able to look that up.
I think it was from Larned. He was very helpful, and I'm sure it was Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that terrible? I can't remember him. And we'd call him, and he'd be out on the listening to things out on the Senate floor and at the State House, and he'd take our calls and help us and talk to us and stuff. You know, he was very helpful.
Well, how did you find Senator Dole and Castlebaum?
Oh, they were very, very supportive of the farmers in Kansas and very, you know, and oh yes, this is what we needed. But then we all knew that when the doors were closed, they sang a different song. Keith Sebelius was real good, though. We really liked Keith Sebelius. And Bob Dole, he is a politician. Wanted to be out there to shake the hands and get the photo ops and all that, but, you know, and he put his name on the bill, but it was half-hearted. I mean, you know, by that time we were educated enough to know about the deals that was made behind closed doors, and so.
So, at first Tractorcade, did you feel that, just at Topeka, was that successful? But the Washington trip was already in the works, wasn't it?
It was already in
because
the works.
Because you took tractors up, people did, and left them there. And then, in January, left from
mm-hmm.
there, I think. So.
Yeah, that could be. Leo brought his back. Yeah. And I didn't know that anybody else had left theirs up there. Because there was some that left from here and mm-hmm. drove to Topeka.
Right.
And those were the ones that we knew,
mm-hmm.
those that left from Lewis and drove to Topeka and then met up with theirs. When they went up to Washington, D.C., they picked up tractors all along the way,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I didn't realize that there was some that left their tractors up there.
Yeah, I think we've heard that in another
yeah.
interview, that some of them, after driving them up in December, they just left them there and then...
Yeah, that could have been. That would have made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the ones that left here decided after mm-hmm. that they was going to go. Because I remember going out and watching them leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a contingency. Why did you and Leo decide not to drive a tractor to Washington?
Expense, being away from the farm. We had the cattle. He couldn't be gone that long. And Lester couldn't be gone from his long enough to go up there and drive it back and drive it up. So we decided that he drove it up, we could drive it back, and that way neither one of them was gone from the farm for so long.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this would be Lester Durley, and he drove the fuel supply truck that supported all the tractors on the way up, and then you had prearranged that you would come up and drive it back. So.
Yeah.
So
I think I've got some pictures in here of that. Mrs. Durley, I think it was, did the, yeah. Look at the, see the.
Yes, we have a picture here of the red truck and the sign on the side.
And yeah. it's all farm, like the A is two ears of corn put together.
Oh,
and
I can't tell that in a little, I'll have to look, blow it up and look closely. We'll have that picture in with your transcript on the.
And I think Mrs. Durley did that. I think she painted that sign.
This would be Lester's wife?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Janet. Isn't that her name? I think it's Janet Durley.
Janet?
Yeah.
Sounds like.
I used to make fun of people that would forget names.
I never did. So, were you in touch with the TractorCade people as they went to Washington? You were still back here. Did you have any communication with them?
Yeah, we went. I worked in the office in Lewis.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And they called. They called back at the office, and people would drop in and say, well, where are they now, and what are they doing, you know? And they had a telephone that they would call back on and let us know kind of what was happening and keep us updated on what they were doing. And they had to be at a certain place before they could call because the reception wasn't that good, you know. They didn't have the towers like we have now.
Yeah, so that's for sure. Do you remember any of those phone calls in particular with any story or anything?
No, they just. The stories after we got to D.C. or more, you know, before it was just they were on the road and they never really talked about anything that happened on the way back.
Okay, so you flew into D.C. on, and what day would that have been? Was that before they took the tractors into Washington, or was it after?
That was after. The tractors were already in on the mall when we went in, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as dates,
that's all right.
I can't remember the dates. But I'm pretty sure that they were already in the mall. But they had tractorcades through D.C. all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There was some really funny things
that
happened
about
up there. There was one guy that we knew, and I can't remember his name. I never thought I'd forget his name because he was real active in American Ag. But he went up and took the they locked the doors of the American Ag building, and this guy thought that, you know, that wasn't right. They shouldn't lock the doors against the people that was paying that to have that office open. And whoever put on these doors wasn't very smart, because they put the hinges on the outside. Well, this guy and some of his farmer friends went and they took the hinges out of the door. Both doors, and they were big, heavy doors. And the next morning when they went to open them up, the doors just fell flat. And the farmers walked in that building then. You know, they couldn't keep them out then because the doors were on the sidewalk.
Now, they were keeping them out simply
because they didn't want to mess with them. They didn't want them. They would open them during the day, but then they wouldn't let us go in.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want us in the ag building. Because, you know, rebel rousers, you know. Darn rednecks get up there and no telling what they did. You know, so they might take the hinges out of the door, you know. Well, they couldn't keep us out after that. And then there was some of our guys that got locked in the Hilton, we called it the the Washington Hilton, because some of them got in there, and Leo was about two doors or two people behind. He just couldn't get up there in time to get locked in.
What are you calling the Hilton?
That was, I can't remember what. Maybe that was another part of the ag building. Maybe that was after they got the doors put back on. But they couldn't get in.
So they had sort of a sit-in?
They got locked in. And then they wouldn't leave. They tried to get them to leave, and they said, "No, this is pretty nice here. We'll just sit here." And they made all kinds of long distance calls back home on their phones and told us how things were up there. And Leo was, when they went into the, invaded the Democratic headquarters, Leo was in that bunch, and I think they spent the night in the Democratic headquarters too, and he called home and talked to us about that.
I didn't realize that they were actually sitting in buildings.
Yeah, they were quite the rebel rousers, you know.
Was he with other Edwards County people at this time?
He was with other Edwards County people, and I don't know who else from Edwards County got in there with him. Harold went up there. Harold Shinstock went up there a couple of times, and I don't know if Harold was up there that time. And I don't know. But there was a bunch of them.
Maybe we should have you go through who you remember was in D.C. We have a pretty good list of the people who drove tractors, but I'm not real sure about people who flew in and out. Can you think of anybody else?
Well, Lester flew in and out,
right,
too. Mm-hmm. He was up there with the tractor cage, but he also
flew up.
He flew it, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was up there more than just for the tractor cage.
Mm-hmm.
And Harold and Leo. I think Deb Stapleton was up there, because he was a very active supporter of it, the Stapletons were. And Jerry, I think Jerry was up there. And I can't remember, it's been too many years, and I hadn't thought about it since then, except what great fun it was. And it was such a neat thing, because you made such good friends when you was up there. You know, you was working for a common goal, and they were all such neat, neat people. We met farmers from Georgia, met a peanut farmer from Georgia.
Not President Clinton.
Yeah. President Carter.
He wasn't a supporter at all.
No, he wasn't. I made a sign up that says, Nixon gave us a fixin', Ford got us bored, and Carter ain't no smarter. So, but we, you know, just at the part of the reason that the American ag movement couldn't really succeed was because there's such vast differences in each area of the country and the way they farm. You know, the Georgia peanut farmer had so many other different issues than the Kansas wheat farmer. It was just, we could say, well, we want parity, and that could bring us a little bit together. We just, no matter what crop it was, we wanted it to pay for itself. Because at that time, the price of wheat wasn't any more than what it was during World War II. And everything had gone up. Interest had gone up. Like Leo was farming on his equity on the farm. And that only goes so far until you finally you've borrowed up your equity and you go under, you know. And it wasn't that the farmers were unsuccessful in what they did. Leo had the year that we went under, his Milo crop was 50 bushel to the acre. His wheat crop was 50 bushel to the acre. The Milo crop was more than that. And you can't be an unsuccessful farmer and do that, you know. It wasn't that the farmers were, in fact, almost they were too successful because they had too much of a surplus. They didn't have to pay you.
That kept the price down.
Yeah. They didn't have to pay us for our crops. We had to sell before they had to pay us, mm-hmm. you know.
Okay, you mentioned another story before we started the interview, something about goats.
Oh, yeah. The Missouri delegation brought goats for a day or two. The Washington, D.C. was the goat capital of the world because the Missouri delegation turned goats loose. Yeah. On the Capitol steps. And watching those D.C. police who had no idea what a farm animal was trying to ride their motorcycles and round those goats up, it was quite hilarious. And there was another guy from the Missouri delegation brought a couple of mules up there. And one of the little girls that he met along the road, she said, oh, fell in love with that little baby mule. It was so cute. She just loved it so much. And so he just handed her the lead rope and said, it's yours, honey. You just take it home and enjoy it. And then he walked away, and her parents were standing there with a Missouri mule wondering, what the hell do we do with this? Where is this going to fit in the brownstone? But it was, another thing that the D.C. police did that was really funny was they tried to scare the farmers with their mounted police. Well, now, you know these farmers, they're not afraid of those horses. They know those horses aren't going to kick them. They're not going to do anything to them. They might push them around, but you take a hot shot and the horse, it moves, you know. And so they put the horses up real quick. When the farmers got the hot shots out, well, they put the horses up and then they brought out the dogs. And they would hide. When the farmers walked through, well, shoot, we never did anything to cause any trouble.
Well,
so they couldn't. Well, yeah, I mean, that was just fun. Mm-hmm. That wasn't trouble. We didn't cause any riots. Mm-hmm. We didn't. In fact, one of the D.C. guys told Leo that that was the most friendliest bunch of
demonstrators
they ever had, because the guys picked up after themselves, and in fact after they left the mall, and a lot of people don't know this, the farmers went back and reseeded the mall and did away with the damage that they caused. There was a snowstorm up there when the tractorcades were up there. And they went out and cleaned the streets and took doctors and nurses and stuff to and from the hospitals, and they helped a lot. And of course that isn't the image that the media wanted to portray of the farmers, so you didn't hear about those stories.
Well, what about this media thing? You've heard this before.
We had a parade that went down through Washington, D.C. And the lanes were six lanes. They were stretched across and as far as the eye could see. And when we got home, Peggy said that they said there was like 600 farmers there. Well, you can't have, there's a lot more than 600 farmers than six across, shoulder to shoulder. Mm-hmm. And as far down as the eye can see.
This is walking, not on the tractor.
This is walking. This is walking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of walking too, you know, as well as the tractors and stuff. We walked the streets a lot.
Can you think of any other stories of things that stand out?
No, probably not that could be
told.
Yeah. But there was a guy from out in western Kansas, and he wanted to go down and see the street where the hookers were. So this old Leo and I and this old farmer, we got in a cab and we got to talking to the cab driver, and he just shut off his meter and he took us all around and showed this old farmer, you know, and all the streets that were the ladies of the night hung out. And it was quite an eye-opener to the old man, you know.
Well, how did you find the people of Washington, D.C.? How did they react to you?
Just the man on the street, we didn't have much. We had a lot to do with the cab drivers and stuff, and the people in the hotels and stuff. And they were very supportive of the American Ag Movement. The guys on the cab drivers, we met one guy who was who was in D.C. driving a cab because he went bust on the farm down south. Mm-hmm. And so he was very supportive, you know. And he said that he just loved to drive the farmers around because he was in touch with home people again, you know, with the kind of people that he grew up with, and the farm people.
And you were staying in a hotel?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right in D.C. or
no? We stayed in Maryland. Mm-hmm. I think Bethesda, Maryland, is where we were at.
Were you close to where the tractor trailers and things were?
We weren't too far. You know, I mean, just a couple of minutes away by cab. You know, we weren't too far away. We was down there all day long every day. The only time we went to the motel was to sleep.
And how long were you there?
I can't remember.
Probably, like a week? Or?
Yeah, probably about a week. And then, yeah. Probably about that. And then we drove the...
You and Leo drove it home.
Leo and the girls and I.
Oh, the girls were there.
Yeah, the girls were there. That's when they went out.
Leslie and Tina.
Leslie and Tina.
Leslie. And how, let's see, I'm trying to think how old they would be about...
Leslie was in the eighth grade, and so Tina would have been like in the sixth grade, fifth or sixth grade, something like that.
And why did you have them there?
We felt like it was an education. They would go up there and they would get a first-hand grasp of the government that they couldn't get in school. And then in government, when they was talking about these buildings and these things, well, the kids knew what they were talking about. And when they talked about the process that a bill goes through, well, they were up there and saw firsthand, kind of sitting out in the halls of the Senate building, but still it was, you know. And we took them to see Mount Vernon. And, you know, it was a very educational trip for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the purpose, was for them to get an education and to see what our government was like, because there wasn't any of us that didn't love our country. and that didn't love our form of government, and we wouldn't have changed it for nothing. We all were very patriotic. We all of us love our country. And we wanted the kids to have a real appreciation of democracy and what it was like and how it worked.
Well, I don't, I'm going to ask you this, but we may come back. When you drove home, was the weather any better than when the tractors came out, or did...
It was cold.
It was cold.
It was cold.
And this is January, or...
Yeah, it was...
Or February.
Yeah. I think the tractors were up there about a month.
Yeah.
So it would have been...
In February
when we brought them home. And it was cold, and we didn't have any snowstorms or didn't have any storms that hampered us any.
And, of course, the fuel truck could pretty much go highway speeds.
Yeah.
And the tractors, we understand, were basically hauled home by implement companies.
Yeah.
And trailered them home.
Right.
So what did you do during your days to demonstrate or to get after the politicians? What were your activities up there?
We walked through the offices and talked to them, those that would talk to us. Some of them, the senator wasn't in, and he didn't know when to be expected. And so a lot of times we just sat there, and we held him captive in his office because he couldn't leave with us sitting there. We knew he was there, so we just sat and talked to the office people, you know.
And these would be any senator, not just Kansas senators.
Yeah, any senator. Because they all voted on it. Mm-hmm. They all had to vote. And so, you know, we just, our Kansas delegation, the Kansas people, they always saw us. But some of the other people, they weren't so gung-ho about seeing us.
Maybe they saw their own people, but...
Yeah. Yeah, but they wouldn't see people from out of state. But we'd sit in there, and the Missouri delegation was, or the Missouri representatives was very good to see us too.
And you basically just talked to them about Faraday and asked for some support.
Asked for their support.
And you talked a little bit about the law enforcement. Was there ever a time when you were afraid of the law enforcement?
No. The police were very nice. They really were. In fact, one of the guys, they had their dogs out there, you know. And the kids and I and Leo went up and talked to them and talked about their dogs and stuff. And we weren't afraid of their dogs because we knew that as long as we were peaceful, as long as we didn't cause any problems, they weren't going to turn those dogs loose on us. Mm-hmm. So none of us were ever really afraid because we knew we weren't going to be anything but peaceful. We bought tickets to the policeman's ball from them and talked to them, and They were really super nice guys. One of the guards in the White House, we took the girls on a tour through the White House. One of the guards at the White House flipped his lapel, and he had a support button for American Egg on the underside of his lapel. He just went and showed it to us and put it back down, you know. They were super.
But now, there, you did have the FBI, and I mean, they were watching you and monitoring you.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you feel about that, or what did you know about that?
Well, I know that one guy, and he was a really rebel rouser. I've got a couple of stories I can't tell, but this one I can tell. He stayed in the where the national headquarters was, stayed in that hotel.
For the AAM?
Yeah. And they had and I can't remember what hotel it was, but there was a hotel that all the delegation stayed at.
Mm-hmm.
And the FBI had rented the whole top floor, and we knew that they were monitoring everything that was going on in the ag offices.
By monitoring, you mean bugging?
Yeah, they were bugging it. And this old farmer knew they were bugging it, and he was from La Crosse. So he went out and called his friend on a payphone, and he said, "Tonight, from my hotel room, I'm going to call, and I want you to just go along with whatever I say. And you just act like you know about it, whatever I say." And the friend said, okay. So that night, the guy called him at home and said, "Everything up here is about ready to go." And he said, okay. He said, "Now, you remember the signal?" "Well, not for sure. You let me know. So tell me again." He said, "Well, when you hear it on the news, you'll know that it's time to start things on this end. You know, you'll know by what you hear on the news that it's that we're going here in D.C. And you just start it here. And all the other states are going to start it at the same time. And it's going to be great. It's going to be great." Guy no more hung up the phone till the FBI was at his door knocking on the door. And the he went to the door and answered his motel room door, and you know, "Well, yeah, we're gonna have a big celebration. You know, we're gonna have firecrackers and we're gonna set them off, and all of them, you know, it's gonna be a big party all over the United States. We're just gonna have a party. What do you guys think?" You know. And the guy out here in La Crosse, the FBI came and visited him. And he said the same thing. "Well, it was just going to be a big party, you know. All over. It was going to be a unity thing. Everybody, all the American ag people all around in the countryside, we was just going to have a party." That was funny.
That's a good story. Any other good stories you're holding back on?
When we go through the pictures, I could probably remember some then. But now those are the that I could tell. This guy, he was so funny. He at the Topeka delegation, him and his friend dressed up like Arabs. You know, they had the white sheets and all
this. I think I've seen pictures.
Yeah, they dressed up like the Arabs.
And they were doing that to comment on oil?
The price of oil and how, you know, the price of oil was, I can't remember how many dollars a barrel it was, but wheat was nothing, you know. And it took so many bushels of wheat for the farmer to have anything. To be able to buy gas for his, or diesel for his tractors and stuff, you know. And that was the reason it wasn't like it is now. There wasn't it wasn't against the Arabs like it, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, generally speaking, you think you were supported in Edwards County. Were there people that thought you were just being foolish
or
rousers or whatever?
Yeah, I'm sure. There was a lot of people that knew we couldn't get anything done and it was just stupid, you know. And we were doing okay, you know. But they were mainly older farmers that were doing okay. Or younger farmers who had inherited everything, that didn't have to buy the land and everything.
Did Leo inherit the farm?
Okay. No, he bought it.
He bought it, okay.
And I think you've sort of told us you do not think you had much of an impact on legislation or the officials?
No, I don't think we did.
So
we had a lot of fun, but we didn't have an impact on it.
So was it a worthwhile project? Would you do it again?
Oh, in a heartbeat. It really helped. Leo was always kind of laid back, you know, and he had difficulty speaking to people, and I did too, you know. I was always shy.
Yeah, okay.
But it didn't help me as much as it helped him. But it really helped him. It gave him the courage to go with for other things. It gave him a voice. Oh. And he could go and, like the flood control issue. Mm-hmm. He was a big opponent of the flood control, the way it was going to be. Mm-hmm. He wasn't against flood control. He knew we needed that. But he was against what they had proposed. He was against that type of flood control, because that would have ruined us. Mm-hmm. It would have kept the water back, and it wouldn't have helped the people in town, because if you build a dike around the city, you can't tell the rain not to rain in that area, and it was going to have a swimming pool effect. Mm-hmm. And it gave him a voice.
Did he do speaking at the meetings, or either locally or in D.C., as far as, I know, like Daryl Miller was?
He didn't do like Daryl. Daryl was, he was a good speaker. Leo, at that time, wasn't that sure of himself and couldn't. Now, later on, especially after we went to Liberal, then Leo became very proficient at public speaking. But at that time, he had to believe in something, and then he wasn't comfortable at speaking. He'd get up and you know, give his opinion at a meeting, but as far as Marge Stapleton was another one that was excellent.
Marge Scheifler.
Marge Scheifler. She was another one that was excellent. Goodness.
We have
her.
We have
Stapleton. I knew
copies
that
of her
right.
Speeches. That yeah, will be on
yeah.
the internet. You might be fun for you to read them after all these years.
Yeah.
Do you think this experience affected agriculture legislation even today, or did it have any impact on?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Their goal back then, it might have slowed it down a little bit. Their goal back then was for everything to be corporate farming. There was no place in farming for the family farmer.
By they, you mean?
The government.
The government.
There was no place in the farming. Or there was no place for a family farm. They wanted corporate farming.
So you think the legislation was actually skewed to eliminate family farmers, mm-hmm. and so corporate?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And you drive out in the country now and you see these places where a family farm once stood, and you see a grove of trees. That's kind of heartbreaking.
Well, I know things did not get any better after the tractorcade. And you and your husband struggled to keep the farm, but you did lose it.
Mm-hmm. Right?
What year did you lose your farm?
And actually, we could have held on a little bit longer, I think. But Leo's health he was starting to have high blood pressure. And he was starting to... In 83.
So this is just 4 years later.
Yeah. So he...
Had you gone to irrigation? Had you...
No, we never... We did not irrigate.
So you didn't have any big debt for irrigation, like mm-hmm. some of the people we've been...
No.
Doing.
No. But when they... if you lost 1 year of farming, or like 1 year of crops, if to hail or something like that, well, you didn't lose just 1 year. You lost several years because, you know, everything was so dependent on that crop. You lost that year, you lost the next year because you had to buy seed wheat. You didn't have any wheat. You lost, you know, it wasn't just 1 year you lost. It was several years. And it was tough. It was really tough. I loved being a farm wife. I loved raising my children on the farm. There's just no better life in the world. And if I won the lottery, I'd probably go out and buy some land and farm till I went broke again, you know. I loved it, and Leo loved it. In fact, we own rentals now. I own rentals now. But the reason Leo bought his first rental is because he got some money. And I can't remember how he came into some money, but he got some money and was driving by a wheat field one day, and he thought, I wonder if I could rent that and buy some cattle and put on it. And then he thought, whoa, Leo, do you want to lose it? So he went and bought a rental. He knew that would make him money. Cattle would lose him.
Did you borrow money from the federal land bank or from the local banker?
Both.
Both? Okay. Did you have trouble with the federal land bank?
No.
Okay.
No, the federal land bank didn't give us any problems at all. The local bank is the ones that... I remember that our last harvest, I was coming into town with a load of wheat, and I heard boom, and we had like a 1927, you know, we were big farmers. We had expensive machinery. This was a 1927 Ford, I think it was, flathead motor, and it threw a rod. And I knew when I heard that, I knew that it had thrown a rod. So I got a ride into town, went into the co-op, and they brought they came out and pulled the truck in and dumped the wheat, and then they took me out to the field, and I told Leo what had happened, and I said, you go on in and see about it, you know. And so I drove the combine while Leo went in and checked on the truck. A couple of days later, I went into the bank, and the girls had, they always borrowed money for their hogs, for their 4-H animals, and for their feed and everything. And then they would go in after the fair, after they sold their livestock, then they would go in and pay off their debt. And that way they saw firsthand what it was to have an animal, and they understood farming a little bit better. And I went in to do something with the girls' livestock, and I can't even remember what it was. And Bill, I went in and talked to Bill Allison, and he said, what's Leo done about that truck? And I said, well, we haven't done anything yet. I said, it's a flathead motor, and, you know, there's no sense in fixing it. It's going to cost too much. So right now we're hauling with one truck. And he said, you tell Leo to go buy him a grain cart. And I said, okay, I'll tell Leo that. And I went and I told Leo that Bill wanted us to buy a grain cart. And Leo laughed. He says, I'm worried about making my land payments and about paying the money that I owe now. He said, I don't want to go in debt anymore. I don't want to buy it. You know, we farm like this a lot of years. We hold with one truck. We can haul with one truck. And then Leo had to go in a couple of days later, and Bill says, Leo, I want you to go buy a grain cart. And Leo says, Bill, I can't buy a grain cart. He said, I'm worried about making my payments and everything. Bill says, don't worry about it. We've got you covered. We'll loan you any money you need. You go buy your grain cart. Well, Leo didn't do it. He didn't want to buy a grain cart. And after harvest was over and everything, Leo went into the bank and Bill was no longer his loan officer. He was given, his account was given over to somebody else. And he went in and visited with him, and he told Leo, he said, I want you to sign over every note that you have to us. And in 30 days, you'll be out of business. We will foreclose on you, and you'll be gone. We're taking over. So it went from, Leo, you got to buy a farm, or you got to buy a grain cart. We got you covered. Don't worry about making your payments. Don't worry about anything. Mm-hmm. To sign everything over to us, your history. You're out of here. So that's when we went up and we filed bankruptcy against the bank. We didn't file bankruptcy. In fact, we came back and I went around and paid everybody in town that I could. And I went up to Oliphant's. I remember I told him, I went up to Oliphant's and I said, now, Oliphant, you cash this check. By the way, you take it into the bank and you cash it. Because after they got the notice for it, they would freeze our account. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make sure that nobody in town was hurt when we declared bankruptcy. So we said, I went up and I told Rodney, I said, now Rodney, you go cash that check right away. Make sure you goes in tonight's deposit. Because I just may go to Dodge this afternoon, and you know what a spendthrift I am. I just might go hit every store in town. So you cash that check before my checks hit the bank. And Leo went down and he paid the John Deere off. We had a bill there on our tractor. We had some work done on it. It was a big bill. And he told Butch Danler, he said, Butch, you make sure that tractor is taken care of. And he said, in fact, I couldn't pay all of it off. He said, why don't you guys put a mechanic's lien on the tractor? Because he knew that we couldn't pay it all off. And by them putting a mechanic's lien on it, before the bankruptcy was ever, before they were notified, John Deere would be safe. They would get their money. Because we knew we couldn't save the 4430. But we wanted to make sure that nobody in town. I was so embarrassed, and Leo was too. We were so ashamed. I was afraid people would look down on us because we had to do this. But the bank left us no choice. And Federal Land Bank, they didn't foreclose on us because we weren't behind any payments with them. We made sure that our payments were up with them. So, and we borrowed money from over in Dodge. It's a government, or like the Small Business Administration. We got money from them to buy an old tractor. And we kept on farming then Leo just couldn't handle the stress anymore. He was driving a truck. Leslie was running the farm. And
he was driving truck to make a living.
Yeah.
And then you went to work for the school, mm-hmm. too, so.
Yeah.
And there were, but there were other farmers in the same boat as you.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was
yeah.
struggling to keep their farm.
Right, right. We had some friends that they went under, and they were so ashamed that because they had lost it, the farm and everything. And Neil says, "Don't be ashamed for losing the farm." He said, "I'm just 4 years behind you," and that's about what he was about 4 years then. But it was hard because Leo was the fourth generation to farm that ground. And he had a really hard time. One night he was sitting out on the hood of the car, looking at the sky and thinking, "God, you know why? You know, I'm such a failure. I've lost my family's inheritance. I've lost 4 years of Shinstock legacy. I've lost. It's gone, and I did it." And Tina was, she had the bedroom that overlooked the drive, and she saw him sitting out there, and she came down and she said, "Daddy, I can't sleep." And he said, "What's the matter?" And she says, "I don't know, Daddy. I just can't sleep. Come in. I want to sit on your lap." So he went in the house and sat in his chair. And she sat down on his lap and put her arms around him and told him that she loved him. And went to sleep in his arms. And he said, "I decided then that I was worth something. My girls needed me." And Tina, it was her way of saying, everything else may be going wrong, but as long as Daddy's in the house, then all's right with my world. Mm-hmm. And that was a big turning point for him. And he'd been contemplating suicide. And that was a big turning point. He went to college, got his degree, and then he went on to human resource management, got a degree in that. And American Ag did all that. It gave him the courage, it gave him a voice, it helped teach him that there was another life besides farming, that there was another way to do it. And I don't know what he would have done if it hadn't been for American Ag to give him that confidence.
That's a moving story. And yet, do you look back and think if American Ag, if those legislators had listened and done something in 79, that maybe you would have been able to keep that farm?
We would have been on the farm. We'd still be out there.
Well, did you grow up on a farm?
No, I was a city girl.
Okay.
My brother and I went to Missouri every summer. And my dad's family was farmers, and so we went out every summer, and I rode horses and followed Uncle Russell and Aunt Vonda around, and I loved the farm life. But no, I was raised. You talk about how fast a tractor go in road gear. Well, I found out when Leo and I first got together that you can't go road gear in the tractor and plow or disc at the same time, because I tried that and it didn't work. A little miscommunication. Leo said, you go in sixth gear, you go out there to the tractor, or go out to the field in sixth gear and then work the field, you know. Well, I thought he meant I was supposed to work the field in sixth gear too, and it didn't work.
So you started farming when you got married?
Yeah.
And I
Well, actually, Leo had farmed.
Yeah, right. Leo
for
had,
years.
But you had.
And when Leo and I got together, when we started dating and started being serious with each other, he says, my first wife hated the farm. And she was always after me to sell it. He said, Mary Ellen, I am a farmer. I love my farm. If you can't love my farm and if you can't farm with me, then this is going to go no farther. So I was a kept woman that summer. We rented a place here in town, and the girls and I lived there, and the girls went to school. Well, it was the whole year. The girls went to school, and I worked for him. And I did everything. I was his hired man. And I did it. And I loved it. I loved running the tractor, and I loved working cattle, and I just loved everything about it. And the girls thrived. They loved. Tina was always so, so shy. And she would never look anybody in the eye. She walked around like this all the time. And if somebody looked to her, well, you know, she looked up like that. She wouldn't raise her head up. And Leo took her in, and he loved her, and he gave her confidence, and he brought her out of her shell. And Leslie loved him from day one. She just, in fact, they was going to town one day, and he said, Leo, would you adopt me? And he says, well, Leslie, I think your mom and I ought to get married first before I adopt you. He says, but I promise you, if when your mom and I get married, I'll adopt you. So they had to go to town on the 24th, and they was going into town, and she says, okay, Dad, you can adopt me after today. You can adopt me. And he says, let's wait a little bit, because I think I can get all three of you, and I'll just adopt y'all. And that's what he did.
So we don't have this. Were you divorced from a first husband? Or
mm-hmm.
Okay, and Leo was divorced too. It was a second marriage for both of
them. Well, it was the third marriage for me. My first, Leslie's biological father was killed in a truck wreck when she was 9 months old. He was a truck driver. So she never knew her biological father. And Rod was the only dad she had known. But Rod turned on him, on the kids. After we got divorced, he turned on the kids.
And Annette through Dieter are all Ron?
No. Annette and Dwight are Leo's children from his first marriage.
Oh, okay.
And Leslie, Tina, and Dieter were my children. And Dieter and Tina were from Ron.
Okay, well, got that straightened out. If we'd done your whole life, I would have gotten that story, but we're not doing the whole life. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the tractor, Cade? And, or about, you've had some marvelous quotes that I can see using. You're a very good storyteller.
It was a wonderful, wonderful time, and it was so good for our family, and it was so good for Leo and I, and for the community in general, because it brought the farming community together. And we really, we had such a deep appreciation for all of our farming friends after that, you know, through this. And for the people in town, because they knew what we were going through, you know, and we were so proud of our community. And, you know, a lot of people were saying, well, let's go to Dodge and do grocery shopping and stuff. You know, it's cheaper in Dodge. We can get... And Leo always said, nope. He said, we are going to support our local town. He said, if we don't support it, then someday we're going to have to go to Dodge because there won't be anything here in town. And he said, I don't want to drive to Dodge for a gallon of milk. And he said, we're going to support our local town. And that's all he... And he was a firm believer in that. We never went out of town to buy stuff. We supported our town.